What antivirus software should I get?
How do I increase the font size for everything on my Mac?
How can I speed up my web browser?
Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Princeton Macintosh Users Group. Tonight we have very special speakers for you.
You are listening to a podcast from PMUG, the Princeton Macintosh Users Group. This is a special enhanced podcast where you can see pictures as you listen along. If you are using iTunes, make sure the lower left picture window can be seen. If it's not there, look at the lower left corner of the iTunes window for four buttons. Click the rightmost one. It has a small square with a triangle inside. The preview picture will now show. You may also see a larger version of the window by clicking on the preview picture. If you leave the large window open, you will see the picture change as the presentation is given. Also, clicking on the link inside the preview picture will open up a web page in your browser. The February meeting featured the newest gadgets and technologies announced at the 2009 Consumer Electronics Show. It was presented by Doug Dixon. But before that, PMUG's Iwa Zak talked about her attendance at the September 2008 Apple Expo in Paris. And now, here's PMUG's president, Alan Fox, to start us off.
All right, folks. We have a jam-packed meeting tonight. Iwa Zak is a member of the Princeton Macintosh Users Group, and I'm going to ask Iwa to come on down and speak about the Paris Expo.
Okay, so you saw that the big news at Macworld was that Apple was not going to be there anymore? Well, that has already happened. Apple did not come to Paris in September. So that's where the bombshell fell, and everybody was very unhappy. Oh, by the way, can you see that little 25 years anniversary?
Yeah.
Apple forgot its birthday. And the Apple Expo, which is a different organization, that has been there all along for all those 25 years, decided to be very discreet about it. So there it is. You can barely see it. When you look at the Apple Expo grounds, this is the building where the Apple Expo actually happens. So what happens when Apple left? This happened. Well, you would think not much, but it's a very big building. So it was actually much, because there was the Apple Store, there was the Apple Education, there was Apple Financing, there was all kinds of exhibits and merchandise and whatnot, and that is gone. So what was there in its stead when they decided to go along without Apple? They put a big semi-transparent tent where all the seminars were going on. So that became the focal point for the expo. Now, where did that leave the MUG group in Paris? Well, in limbo. They were hawking Microsoft Office. Before then, they were always doing this on the side, but that's all they are left with for the moment. They used to have a big room full of the newest Macs where they had the Easy Mac seminars for everybody who cared to come along and listen. So that fell by the wayside also. The users altogether felt quite abandoned, and I must say that Apple has treated France for a number of years in a very peculiar way. The iTunes store was late. The iPhone was late. There is still no store. The store is going to open, however, and it's going to be under the Louvre, which couldn't be a better location with all the throngs of people coming and going. It's a perfect location. And ostensibly, they said that they are concentrating on the store. That's why they couldn't make it to the expo. However, the French are still spoiled. They got the iPhone in the end. Last November 2007, but they got the unlocked iPhone, They also had great coverage in the press. You open the paper and there was this great big spread, 4 or 6 pages full of stuff. In the good old days, the entire metro stations were plastered with Expo advertising. Well, that's no more. However, that organization still has great hopes. They are going to build a Herzog pyramid. Herzog is this famous Swiss architect who built the Bird's Nest Stadium in Beijing for the Olympics. And it's going to look like this. A good story about this building, go to Daily Motion and find Herzog, and out pops the movie that tells you exactly how it's going to be from every possible angle. It's just wonderful. It's kind of a flat pyramid on one side and has great big sides here. It's going to be 200 meters tall. And this is going to service the expo. Hotels, seminars, offices for these people who come and go. Amazing stuff. It's going to be finished in 2012, in only 3 years. And it's going to be a really remarkable green building. Pardon? No, it's all glass. It's all glass. It has no walls to speak of. You really must see this movie. Now, the iPhone phenomenon, you simply cannot escape it. When I was there in April 2008, I counted 5 iPhones. By September, there were 35. And this is just, you know, carefree looking around, not very unscientific. Nevertheless, they're in evidence. And I'm going to show you a little segment there about the excitement of the iPhone that you may enjoy as well. Another interesting thing about this expo is how you got to it. The way you got to the actual grounds became very interesting because Paris is becoming green so fast that you wouldn't believe it. There is a great beltway all around town. They are now trying to mimic this with a tramway. Now, the trams are extra quiet, extra fast, and they have green tracks. I mean, the best English lawns all around town. So this is really wonderful. Another way of getting there is by bicycle. Since 2007, they have introduced these free bikes that you can pick up and go wherever you please. Now, Paris is known for a very dense metro station network. If you think that this is a lot, there are 5 times as many bike stations now. And it only happened in a year and a half. It's just astounding. So everybody goes by bike, drops it off, goes somewhere else, hops on the tram, and this in addition to the metro. So it's just fabulous. There are also bike taxis, and there are river taxis. I mean, all kinds of things other than buses. There are buses, but it's wonderful that they are going this way. There will also be 400 green cars for rent in the same system as the bikes are now in 2010, and there will be 700 stations, 200 of which will be underground, and they will extend the system to electric cars by 2012. Oh, and there is a tax called picnic tax on throwaway things, and this tax is quite high. In Belgium, for instance, it's 20%. So this is meant to discourage people from buying things that are used only once. And another thing, this was a year of anniversaries. Well, of course, the 25th anniversary of the Mac, right, that Apple forgot. And there was also the 50th anniversary of the business district called La Défense, which is a series of skyscrapers well beyond the Seine. And there was also a special lighting of the Eiffel Tower to commemorate the French presidency of the European Union for the 6 months. But it was really spectacular.
And Ava, all right. Tonight's special guest, Doug Dixon, is also a member of PMUG. He's an independent technology consultant. He graduated Brown University, worked for a while at Intel and Sarnoff. He's written 4 books, over 250 articles. He's editor-in-chief of MediaWare magazine. He's local to the area. His wife is a volunteer in a number of charitable organizations. Doug is an expert witness in technology cases. So I can't think of anyone who's better equipped to tell us all about this stuff over here, which is at the Consumer Electronics Show. So please welcome Doug Dixon.
Everything I'm presenting tonight comes direct from my website. And the easiest way to find my website is go to Google. It's the easiest way to go anywhere, right? And find Douglas Dixon. Google loves my website because it's got like real content in it. That's a cute little mouse. Look at that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Dr. Stephen Resnick,
for that. Oh, wow. That's scary. Okay. And the site is called Manifest Technology. And so the site has several hundred of my articles on digital media that you're welcome to read. It has a bunch of references, and it also links off to my blog, which is an excuse for me to write shorter pieces about fun things, many of which you will see here tonight. So there's a preview of the talk. You're welcome. What can I say? Also on the site down here are my galleries. And this is where I organize information about different kinds of technology. So, well, for example, audio accessories and digital media players and portable power and other things in different categories. So I can't compete with CNET or Consumer Reports and review everything on the face of the planet. So this, think of these as sort of a combination buyer's guide, trends to look for, and some sample interesting products. And so that's what we'll talk about tonight. Interesting products and new trends and new technology. This all comes from the CES conference, the Consumer Electronics Show, which was just held in Vegas as it usually is in early January. So I was at Paris too. You're welcome. The attendance this year was down at the show. The attendance was only 110,000 people. Ooh, wow, that was really down. Because the year before it was 140,000. I'll tell you, 30,000 people makes a big difference in terms of getting in lines and getting from one place to another. It was wonderful. Because all the companies were there. They've already rented the space. They all have new products they want to sell. You can't stop selling products. Sony and Panasonic and people like that can't stop selling products. So there were 2,700 exhibitors there. You know, do the math. How much time do you have per exhibitor to see the show? It's just absolutely crazy. And companies weren't necessarily cutting back either, which was sort of interesting. There were several companies actually broadening their product lines, doing line extensions to move from upscale business into mid-range business or into low-range business because they want to reach out to a broader group as a result of that. So what happened at CES? Right up here, my top article is Digital Media Trends 2009, and that's what I'm going to be using for the discussion today. So we'll talk about mobile communications, portable players, storage, audio accessories, etc. And I'm just going to hop around a lot and show you a bunch of interesting things. So what was the number one interesting but slightly goofy thing at CES? And the answer is the watch phone. Okay. Direct from LG, and yes, the executive presenting this at the press conference took the call on his watch phone. Dick Tracy calling? Come in, please, right? So does that make any sense at all? You know, the Dick Tracy model where everybody's walking around on the street talking into their wrist, you know, just doesn't work. But what we have that Dick Tracy didn't have is the Bluetooth headset. With a Bluetooth headset, this makes a lot of sense. You're no longer carrying that phone in your pocket or on your belt or in your purse or whatever. It's just right there. It's your watch when you want to watch. It's your camera when you want a camera. It's everything you want it to be and a phone and a music player and all the rest of that. So no date for release, no price, no gory details. It was all behind glass on the show floor. Interesting idea. We'll see. But if you want a goofy, interesting product, there you go. You're welcome. What was the most interesting product at CES? I'd have to say the Palm Pre. So let me do some context around the Palm Pre. Now, how many of you have an iPhone? Look at that. Yeah. I did the PC users group last night. There were fewer there with iPhones. But some of them had iPhones, yeah. So what the iPhone has is Apple's beautiful focus on design and Apple's beautiful laser-like focus on a design that meets a market. And the Palm Pre is interesting because there's a guy who designed that product too, and he had that kind of thought. And if you go to the site and watch the video, you can see him present his product. And so it may not make it to the market, it may or may not be a success, but it's interesting because somebody really thought about what a smartphone should be. So what's an iPhone? It's clearly focused on iTunes and desktop synchronization to devices, to your media and all the rest of that. What other kind of products are out there? There's a Google phone. Does anybody have a Google phone, perchance? Totally different market focus. The Google phone is all about the cloud. People who live up there in the cloud, like we were just talking about. So they have their Google Mail, they have their Google Contacts, they have a Google Calendar, their photos are up there in the cloud, and they don't necessarily have a laptop that goes everywhere with all their stuff on it anymore. They live in the cloud, they're on a campus, they're at a university, they're at work, moving from machine to machine. When they want to check in, they just go up to the internet and check in. This device brings the cloud to your pocket. It syncs with the Google environment up there. And there is no desktop synchronization out of the box with this device. It doesn't sync at all on your desktop. Very, very different focus. And you can see these companies sort of nailing different corners of the market. So here's the BlackBerry. Anybody have a BlackBerry, perchance? Okay. What's a BlackBerry? Everybody knows what a BlackBerry is. It's a text device for communicating, particularly for work, particularly for the enterprise, enterprise email, all that kind of stuff. Another third very different approach to what a smartphone is. And then, of course, there's Windows mobile phones. Anybody have a Windows mobile phone? I just had to ask. Okay. So what's the design philosophy of the Windows mobile phone? Not to be rude, but it's to put Windows on a phone. You know, what's wrong with this picture, right? The Windows mobile phone has a task manager where you can kill your running tasks. I mean, what is wrong with this picture? And as a result, HTC and other companies have actually put front ends on top of it that give you a nicer user experience before you go deep down inside and end up in Windows Mobile. Windows Mobile hasn't had the focus of a designer who really cared about a particular market and a particular user experience. And it shows. It just absolutely shows. So what's the Palm Pre about? Well, it's about this big. It slides open to reveal a keyboard. So it's a palm-like keyboard. You can turn it on its side and use it that way. You know, it's all pretty much the same, that kind of thing. But what it has is two very interesting new ideas in the design approach. And again, I'm skimming rapidly here. One is it recognizes that you do multiple things at once. You know, back to the old Palm day, you had one application, you ran your one application. If you wanted to skip, copy and paste over to another application, it was a pain. And the iPhone doesn't even let you copy and paste, which is just amazing. The Pre is all about doing multiple things at once. You browse multiple web pages, multiple websites, and compare the results. You copy and paste from your contacts into a document, into an email, etc. And so the way this interface works is you're looking at your screen, which looks like this, and then you do a gesture, and this is very gesture-based. The area at the bottom of the screen, below the screen, is actually for gesture input as well, so you don't have to swipe your peanut butter finger all over the screen all the time. So you do a gesture, and your card, your screen, shrinks down like it shows here. And so now you see an array of cards on a desk. And each card is an activity, a thing you're doing, a web browsing session or whatever. So this isn't a desktop with multiple overlapping windows and you can't resize the windows and, you know, it's not 3D or any of that kind of thing. It's just a little array of cards, which are your current activities. And you can rearrange them because you want to hop back and forth between these two or compare those two. And when you're done with them, you just flick them and they go off screen. You didn't close the application or terminate the running task or anything. It's just you don't want to think about that activity, so you throw it away. And there are other gestures that bring up quick lists of things that you might want to do and the rest of that. But it's just a very, very interesting, very, very nice approach. The other thing the Pre knows about is multiple personalities. And we all have, not to be pejorative here, multiple personalities because you have your work email and you have your home email. You have your IM address that you contact people on and you text message with people. You have contacts. Very often in your contact manager, you have to make multiple instances of people because this is the work person, this is the home person, this is the PMUG identity of the person or whatever. The Pre collapses all that and knows about the idea of multiple personalities. So you can have your Google home calendar that you share with home people and you can have your work calendar and it integrates the two. You can put in one contact list all the different ways that this person exists, including their professional existence on LinkedIn and their personal existence on Facebook. And because the Pre knows all that, if you don't have a picture of them, it'll go to Facebook, grab the picture, and bring it down for you, for example. Sort of cool. If you start corresponding with somebody on AIM while they're at work, and then they head off to the car, you can continue a threaded conversation and change the transport medium from instant messaging to text messaging, and the Pre knows it's the same person in the same conversation and presents that to you. So some really, really interesting ideas. We'll see how it all plays out. It was demoed at the conference, at the press conference. And then if you had a special pass, you could go to a special room and see more demos of it. But they carefully only demoed the same stuff that they also showed at the press conference. And you weren't allowed to ask about anything else, and you weren't allowed to touch it. Okay? But, you know, what they showed makes a lot of sense and worked nicely, and we'll see.
Is it synced with any of the Mac applications, calendar?
Heaven forbid talk about any of that.
Okay.
Absolutely not. I'm no discussion of that.
Pre.
Sometimes with an accent, but sometimes not. No, due out mid-year. No price, no real date. Comes from Sprint. Yeah. And it's, well, There's Linux under there, and there's the same kind of sort of standard web-ish kind of interface that the other companies are starting to do as well. So we'll see. But it's their build of that. Yeah, it's their project. It's their software. And their investors gave them a chunk of funding before CES intended to get this to product. So unless they blew it all at parties at CES, we'll see. Okay. The other kind of communication device that's coming along are netbooks. Anybody have a netbook? This really isn't an Apple kind of thing, and we'll see if this comes. The idea with a netbook is, yes, a little portable device is okay, and you can browse the web and all the rest of that. But if you want to do more work than that, it's nice to have a computer form factor, even though it's smaller, and a keyboard, even though it's smaller, and do some browsing. So there have been a bunch of these products out. You can argue the one laptop per child project was a kind of netbook. Asus has a whole bunch of these products. And Sony, which has actually been going upscale in their product line, they've been adding Blu-ray drives and things like that to their notebooks, introduced this product, which they carefully do not call a netbook. You're not allowed to call it a netbook. That would be pejorative. It's the Lifestyle PC. There you go. The VioP Lifestyle PC. So instead of a MacBook Air or the small Sony, which is like $1,800, these are smaller machines at the under $1,000 kind of price range. This one actually runs Vista Home, believe it or not. It has a more than 1 gigahertz processor. It has enough memory to do web browsing and things like that.
You mean gigahertz?
And it...
Gigahertz. 1 megahertz.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Apple
II. I know. It's hard. What can I say? Thinking back to the PMUG library on the floppy disk, right? Yeah.
Why do you speculate
so,
why has an Apple entered
well,
the market?
Well, you talk to Sony, and you know what do they see this? This isn't a primary notebook. And if you're the kind of person who carries a notebook around, you don't need one of these, right? And it's not a primary notebook. It doesn't have enough oomph to do all those notebooky things that you need if you have a primary notebook. But if you don't have a primary notebook, but you are traveling a lot and you do want to do email because it's Wi-Fi and broadband mobile as well, then this starts to make sense. So it's not for the nerd or the IT jock or the computer stuck person, but it's for that broader audience and, in Sony's case, women who can put it in a purse and take it along and access things. So it's a different demographic. And we'll see if this helps sort of open up the market in that way, in which case I'm sure Apple would be interested because it's the right demographic for them. But there is a price competition issue as well.
Do they tend to have hard drives?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, hard drives or SSDs. Yeah, this comes with both, and the price goes up accordingly. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of those out. I'll flip quickly through portable media players, just because you all know about iPods, but just to show you the kinds of other stuff that's out and to compare sizes. So this is the old Nano, for example. This is SanDisk's Clip. And these devices all do FM radio. They all do voice recording. They all have a slot to add a micro SD card, for example, as well. So we're seeing more and more of that in the market. Some companies have done players with larger screens and tried to go much larger, and that just really hasn't worked out. This is the Fuse that I just talked about. Samsung is doing some really interesting thing with touchscreen players. So you see this player here, there's no controls on it. It's all touchscreen. And now they're doing haptic feedback, so you get that vibration thing when you press a key. And these players have speakers, which starts to make a heck of a lot of sense when you want to, you know, enjoy a piece of music in a hotel room or something like that. So there's a lot of technology coming along that way. The next step is to go wireless, of course. So there's the Touch, which is like the ultimate wireless media player, right? But some of these other companies are trying similar, do something with Wi-Fi, but not as much as the Touch because you don't have a full browser. So Microsoft keeps trying with the Zune. Bless their heart. I mean, they're really trying to make sense out of wireless. So the devices sync with each other sort of in a limited way. The device does wireless syncing at home, so that's nice. That's very helpful. And they're trying to do social media kinds of things. So if you listen to a piece of music and you on the FM radio and you like it, you can tag it or you can go to a hotspot and download new music and things like that. But you know, it just clearly hasn't caught the interest of consumers. And Creative, for example, is trying this as well with their Zen XFi Wi-Fi player. What does it do in Wi-Fi? Well, it does instant messaging. So you can type in text with these 9 key buttons, which is sort of painful. And it does connecting over your home network to your home PC so you can stream media that way. Or it connects over Wi-Fi to Creative's server in the sky and gives you access to NPR and that, you know, some of that kind of stuff. So it's interesting to see what these companies are trying, but it's clearly not working spectacularly. So how else can you do media playback in a portable way? And the answer is, well, there are a couple interesting approaches. SanDisk is trying something to revive the concept of physical media. And so here's SanDisk's idea. The problem, SanDisk says, with CDs is they don't fit. You know? Okay? You know? It's not that physical media is necessarily evil. It's just it's too big for our lifestyle now, right? So if you were SanDisk and your business was making teeny tiny little pieces of storage media, what kind of media would you choose as a physical format? And the answer, of course, is micro SD cards. So in here is this tiny little card the size of my fingernail. And on that card, which you can now go to a store and buy for the same price as a CD, $14, is a record album. Okay? So that album is actually just a standard 1 gigabyte, not megabyte, micro SD card. And that's just a standard storage card. If you want to wipe it off and use it for other kind of storage, you can do that. And the songs are just MP3 files, no DRM, God forbid. So SanDisk has gotten all of the record companies to agree to this as a possible new physical format. And we'll see how that plays. So the idea is that card will play in any phone that has a micro SD slot. There's like one major phone that obviously doesn't. And and in SanDisk's little players and other people's little players as well. The problem with that, of course, is you have this tiny little card which can hold zillions of songs, and it only has one album on it. So now you're in the business of swapping these tiny little cards, and where do you keep them, and what happens if you swallow it, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So that's a problem. So SanDisk announced at CES that they're going to introduce a step up from this called slot radio. With slot radio, on the card is 1,000 songs divided up into genres. So 10 genres, you know, 100 songs each. And then you can use the interface to choose the radio station you want to listen to and the music you want to listen to. And they also expect to sell genre-specific cards, so you can buy 1,000 country tunes, for example, or something like that. Because the record companies aren't totally insane, this format, the radio format, does have DRM on it. So it's only playable in new phones or certain players. But you can see an attempt to keep physical media alive because lots and lots of people, particularly people without iPods, have a real hard time finding music and syncing music. And so SanDisk is making this attempt to help them out. Another approach to that same kind of radio kind of thing is the Slacker player. Now, do you guys know about Slacker? There's also a bunch of other sites. This is internet radio, free internet radio. So you go online to slacker.com, you choose your station, you know, top hits, rock, classical, or whatever, and it starts playing music. Now, again, they've licensed this through all the record companies, and so there's constraints on it. It has to be a radio-like experience. If you don't like something you're listening to, you skip it, but you can't go back. You can't save. You can't replay. You just move forward in time through a playlist. And then as the system learns more and more about you, you know, like iTunes is doing, it can recommend and choose music for you. So if you choose, you know, top hits of some sort and there's a particular band you don't like, you ban that band, and so you'll never hear them again. You're safe, right? And so to give you that same experience, this is a lot like what satellite radio does. They give you the same experience. They now have a portable player. So this is the Slacker portable player that synchronizes to your Slacker account and downloads new music in the genres that you've chosen. Customized the way you want them. So only certain artists, only certain albums or whatever. And it's also a radio-like experience. You can only skip. You can't go back. You can't replay. And you can put your own music on it as well. So we're seeing more and more attempts to free up music by constraining it to be radio-like because we're sort of used to radio and that's okay with us. So we'll see how that plays out. Be interesting. So enough about portable players. Let's go back here. Portable storage. The big news at CES in storage is the next step forward in capacity. So the original SD card format was designed to go up to a whopping 2 gigabytes. And hey, that was plenty for us, right? And then we started wanting to store HD video on these little cards. How insane is that, right? And so that brought the SDHC format, which goes up to 32 gigabytes, which is pretty cool till you realize that today's high-def camcorders have hundreds of gigabytes of storage on them. And so now you need more. So at CES was announced the next step forward, which is SDXC, with a capacity capability to go up to 2 terabytes. So that'll help a little bit more, right? So for example, a consumer camcorder shooting HD video will not have to compress it as aggressively now. So you'll get even better quality out of your video. And you get faster data rates as well. So this is definitely fun, fun stuff. I'm moving quick here, as you can see. Talk a little bit about headsets. I assume most of you have some kind of Bluetooth headset to play around with. The message about headsets is this noise reduction stuff really works. Okay? So when you go looking for another headset, pay a little more to get the noise reduction thing. I'm in love with these Jawbones. This is the original Jawbone. This is the new one, which is significantly smaller. I can use this between trains on New Jersey Transit and talk, and you won't know that I'm standing on a train. I mean, it's really that good. And one of the reasons it's so good, this particular model is so good, is there's a little nub on the back that actually sits against your cheek and detects that you're talking, and it uses that additional information to help do a good job. The problem with these things is it's shoved in your ear all day, which is sort of a pain. Some people really don't like things shoved in their ear. I can't imagine why. And even if you like it, you're going to sweat and get tired, and the thing's going to come loose and be flapping around out there, and that's not sort of good. So some of them are moving to this model with the double loop kind of thing. So there's a loop that sits in your ear, but not deeply, and then a second loop that actually catches on the folds in your outer ear and holds it more securely there. So there's some interesting new ideas coming along there. There's a lot of emphasis on fancy designs. So this, for example, is the Zivio Boom. So it's pretty and it comes in pretty colors. But the interesting thing is it has a boom mic. So the boom actually comes out and gets closer to your face. So that's going to help with voice quality and noise reduction. It's also a signal that you're not an insane person wandering a street talking to yourself, you know. Yeah. And so there's a social aspect to that as well, which is sort of good, sort of a positive. Somebody had the discovery. It was you, right? Nice designer look, but it also tries to put that closer to your face. But more and more, your phone-like device also plays stereo music. So what are you doing with only one ear? You know, what's wrong with that picture? So there are these Bluetooth devices that give you both ears. So this has a removable ear hook, which has a wire that comes around to your other ear. For example, this is a Plantronics design. And the front actually slides open as well to bring the mic closer to you. So there's some interesting and fun things going on with audio accessories like that.
Nah.
Yeah, right. Oh, you don't want to be fried. Too late now. Yeah. Yeah. That's why you don't leave it in your ear all day, right? So there are other approaches for retrofitting, for example, the iPod earbuds. So the one on the top here is a plastic piece you put on the end that helps it root in your ear and hold on that way, and also has these flanges which helps keep out sound. And the other, which I donated for you to raffle off, is the Bud Fits. So this retrofits an ear hook onto the iPod earbuds. So again, it'll stay on better when you're out jogging or something like that. When you sneeze, your things don't fall out. So how much should you spend for earbuds? Well, JVC is making buckets of money with these $9 earbuds, these gummies, which come in these, you know, they're just fun little things. Impulse buys come in fun colors, and they're just flying out the door at the checkout counters. They're just doing great. You can move up the chain. Companies like Sony and JVC make $100 earbuds of various sorts. How many of you have like $100 or more earbuds? Yeah, we got a sucker or two here, right? Yeah. But if you're going to start paying that kind of money, you might want to be interested in a company like Sennheiser that just really knows about audio. So Sennheiser has like these 95s, which are $140, that are just absolutely beautiful as earbuds. Sleek has customizable earbuds. They actually have little itty bitty filters for bass and treble that you can pull in and out to boost or drop bass and treble, depending on your preference and, you know, the kind of music that you're listening to. Vimota has some very nice $100 earphones. And then Monster announced just before CES, or just at CES, the Turbine earbuds, which have the sexiest packaging I've ever seen. So it comes in a presentation case with a magnetic lock that opens up to reveal the earbuds and the packaging for the earbuds. It's just very, very nice. But it's $50 more than those other ones. And is it really worth $50 to you? Good question. And they have really boosted up bass. So if that's what you like listening to, you may be interested in them. But if you want the ultimate in the earbud experience, I point you to a company called Ultimate Ears, which was recently bought by Logitech. These guys make their business custom making earbuds for professional musicians to use while performing. Okay, so they know custom good sound. And so they have a product line that starts around $100 with earbuds. Then they have earbuds which have both a regular speaker and a bass speaker in them to give you more power. And then they have the triple fi, 3 speakers per ear, low, mid, and high, for over $300. Laugh if you want, but... Yeah. And if you're riding a subway or you're riding the plane, it's not worth it. But if you want to hear sound that's pretty close to listening to reference monitors, this will give it to you. I mean, these are spectacular. In fact, they're so good, the company warns you not to wear them too long because you'll hurt yourself. You know, they're just so good. So there you go, $300 earphones, just what you needed, right? Yeah, because we're saving money now, right?
Well, we have to get this economy going.
Yeah, exactly, for the good of America, right? So moving on to more wholesome activities, portable power and green power, which was a big, big deal at CES. Well, one form of green power that's coming along is fuel cells. Now, you may have heard about fuel cells in the negative sense of they're full of toxic chemicals and they explode on airplanes, which is sort of a problem, you know, not exactly what you want. But this company, Medison, has fuel cells that they swear are non-toxic, and DOT has approved them for travel on airplanes and all the rest of that. So why would you be interested in a fuel cell? Well, the way Medison explains it is a battery is a race engine. It's for quick power right away. It's a sprinter. A fuel cell is the long-distance runner. So you pick it up for an emergency. It sits on your desk or your car or whatever for a year and a half. And then when you need it, you take it out, squeeze it to mix the chemicals, shake it up, and you've got power. So it's a really, really interesting idea for emergency power, kind of portable power kind of applications. It's not yet to the point where you can pour in Gatorade and repower it or whatever. At the moment, the box actually comes with a label on it so you can mail it back for recycling. But you'll be seeing more of fuel cells. Fuel cells are starting to make more sense, which is good. The other kind of portable power is solar power, obviously. There's sort of a fundamental flaw with solar power, which is it has to be like pointing to the sun, right? So you walk around with the thing, you know, or you're trickle charging your device while you're inside, you know, it just doesn't quite work. So the thing that makes solar power make sense is to combine it with a battery. Okay. So this is the Solio Classic. It spins open to be a flower. Isn't that the sweetest thing? With a battery in the back. So you sit it somewhere, charge it up all day, and then you have the power that you want in the evening or whatever. And this comes in several different styles, including a travel, a more rugged version for travel. You can charge a small device like a portable player or a phone or something like this. So this lets you do that on the go. You know, if you're mountain climbing, you use solar power. The base camps have huge arrays of solar power collectors because mountain climbers all have cameras and satellite phones and laptops in order to send photos back to their family and all the rest of that. So that's what they use. HiMini is an interesting company. They're trying something different. I'm not sure it makes a whole lot of sense, but it's interesting to experiment with. So they have the battery combined with a wind turbine. So you put it on your bike, basically. And it doesn't charge up the whole battery, so you really have to plug it into the wall before you leave, but it helps trickle charge it. And then they have a separate, actually you can get one or more solar panels like this and then connect them together to boost up power. Sort of clunky to use, and this is in a cardboard case, so it's not what you're going to take camping, right? And this just has a pretty flimsy little thing on that's going to rip off in high winds anyway, so this isn't the ultimate solution for, you know, the Appalachian Trail or whatever, but it's an interesting way to experiment with solar energy, basically. But even with those devices, you still need a wire to connect to your device, and you still need the right connector to connect to your device. So that's a pain. Let's get rid of all that stuff, and which brings us to wireless power. Mm-hmm. So the Palm has a charging dock, which is wireless. And there's two companies with two different approaches to wireless power, which will be coming out this year. One is this company called Wild Charge, and it uses conduction, direct connection. So the idea is you have a little connectors, actually these little metal stubs on the back of your device. You put it on the pad, it charges. The good news is you put it anywhere on the pad, it charges. You can have multiple ones on the pad. It's high efficiency, low cost, just works. Very nice. And you really don't want to put a piece of metal on the pad, but it'll just turn off if you do that. It's not like it's going to explode. And you can have other stuff there, and it's not going to damage it or whatever. The alternate approach, which is what PowerMat's using, is induction, magnetic induction. So there's actually a magnetic field. So the device has actually a small thing, almost like an RFID tag in it, but it has to be oriented properly, and there's actually a magnetic pole to orient it properly on the pad. But you can mix different kinds of devices because these will be low power spots and this will be a high power spot, which is what the picture shows. So on the left there is a puck, a high power puck with a connection to a laptop. Exactly. So you can build it into your stovetop, you can build it into the desk. So, you know, in their model, they'll license this everywhere, and everywhere you go, you just put down your device and it trickle charges, which is sort of cool. There is a magnetic field there, so I'm not exactly sure what happens when you put your magnetic strip device on it. But it has...
Standing there next to you,
yeah, exactly. Well, that too. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And... but another interesting possibility, that magnetic field can pass data as well, so it can be a data interface. So that's sort of interesting. So we'll see how that all plays out. There's obviously a big battle to license that all out, and we'll see how that plays. I forgot to show you one thing, which I really did want to show you. Bone conduction earphones. Why shove something in your ear at all? Why block your ear because you're out jogging and don't want to be run over by that truck or whatever? So these are bone conduction earphones, which go behind your head and then just sit in front of your ears, and the sound actually conducts through the bones. That's why it's called bone conduction into your body. There is a couple issues here. One, you have to crank the power up or you just don't hear it at all. And there is some residual sound coming out that somebody sitting right next to you might get a little aggravated about. But again, for conditions where you don't want to have something shoved in your ear, this makes an interesting alternative. Okay? Just what you needed.
I'm waiting for them to implant.
Yeah, right. Well, there's
mm-hmm.
So I'm going to zip through digital imaging, talk about camcorders a little bit, and then finish up with a couple fun little things at the end there. Cameras and camcorders. The big thing that's happening, of course, is higher res, you know, 10 megapixel cameras, high def video cameras, and smarter cameras. So face finding. So you all know about face finding. So it finds the faces in the scene and uses that to help not only focus, but color balance and all the rest of that. Now there's smile finding and customized smile finding. Do you want old faces or young faces? Do you want a little smile or a toothy smile? And the camera will shoot when it sees what you want to see. Blink detection. You take a couple shots, it tells you somebody was blinking in the shot. It'll warn you that the shot you took was bad, you should retake it. And then this whole thing about camera modes where you tell your camera, I'm looking at mountains, or you tell your camera, it's dark out. I mean, how stupid is that? Hey, camera, it's dark out. Duh. You know. So cameras will mode set themselves automatically. Even macro mode, they'll set automatically. So more and more and more, the camera's trying to be smart enough to take it to overrule your stupidity, if you know what I mean. Not anybody here, of course. And then there's camcorders. And what's happening in camcorders is the triumph of flash memory storage. Tape camcorders, gone. DVD camcorders, pretty much gone. Flash and hard disk. And the only reason hard disk is around is that flash doesn't quite have the capacity yet. So little itty bitty camcorders like this size do HD. So that's an HD camcorder. You're welcome. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous what you can get now. Under $1,600 for HD camcorders. So these are flash memory camcorders in this tiny, tiny, tiny form factor. Last year they were the size of a Coke can. Now they're smaller. You know, I need a new metaphor, right?
Change the storage in this.
Yeah, they all have SD cards you pop in and out. Some of them have internal storage as well. So absolutely.
Is there anything that have multiple SD slots?
Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot. I think I've seen one of those. But it would seem to be a natural, yeah. They will automatically switch between internal and SD, so you can record to SD, pop it out, it'll record to internal, and then go back if you want to do that.
About flash versus hard drive, do you see?
Yeah.
Because hard drives are making a lot of progress.
Yeah, absolutely. So these are hard drive camcorders, go up to, this is the Sony line, 240 gigabytes for $1,500 for full HD recording, 12 megapixel stills, you know, good Sony optics, embedded GPS, a lot. Hundreds of hours of HD video recording before you have to do something with a camcorder. What you do with all that when you're done shooting, that's a good question. But, you know, just like you can take a camera out these days and just shoot and shoot and shoot and not worry about filling it up with hard disk camcorders, you can do the same. And Panasonic has similar products. The Panasonic standard definition, not high def camcorders, these little ones here go up to 70x optical zoom. Okay? So, and they start at, what, 329 with SD cards. So ludicrously inexpensive, but it needs a good enough lens to handle that zoom, and it also needs good enough image stabilization to handle that zoom. Because, you know, you're looking at the pinpoint on the wall there and the camera's just going to be shaking too much. Just totally unacceptable.
What's the sort of the baseline for HD cameras?
Pricing?
Yeah.
Yeah, coming down $500-$600 kind of range. Right. Yeah. Or you can get these pocket camcorders for $100, $200. So this is, and we're going to compare sizes now. This is the Kodak, horribly named ZI6, shoots HD video for $179. Okay, nice big screen on the back. Pop-out USB connector, so you don't need any wires to use it. Also shoots stills, also shoots standard def. Display on the back, everything you need. And SD cards to pop in and out. Okay, not bad. Still too big, right? Not acceptable. Absolutely not acceptable. What we need is the Creative Vado. So just introduced from Creative is another HD camcorder. Much better, right? Much better, okay. Shoots HD, has the USB connection, takes SD cards, all that same kind of stuff in a smaller form factor. And Kodak will be revising this as well. Still too big, right? Just not acceptable. Absolutely not acceptable. Which brings us to the Flip. Any of you have a Flip? A Flip is the best thing on the face of the planet, absolutely. So this is the Flip version. This is the standard definition camcorder. This is last year's Flip. And what they did, it's sort of like what Apple did with the iPod. They took everything out till it was the ultimate device to do a specific job. You want SD cards? No. You want zoom lens? No. You want removable battery? No. You want to shoot photos as well as video? Nope. You want to shoot different resolutions of video? Nope. What does it do? You push the on button, 1-100, 2-100, 3-100, it's on. You push the big red record button, and you're recording. And you shoot an hour of video because it has enough memory to shoot an hour of video. And it has a battery that'll hold an hour, that'll run for an hour. And what more could you ask for? Just a beautiful, beautiful device. So now there's the HD Flip, which was announced late last year. Guess what size it is? It's exactly the same. That's what they did. The same size, the same shape, the same buttons, the same features. It shoots an hour of video. It's just HD now. And it looks great. It just absolutely looks great. So is this the best video you can possibly shoot? No. But does it fit in your pocket? You can take it everywhere. Yes. Just hang on a sec. And does it look good when you're shooting events outside? Sure. I took it to see the waterfalls, the New York waterfalls this summer. Everybody's there with their big fancy cameras, and I'm just, da-da-da-da-da-da. Looks great. I couldn't zoom in. Sorry. Burn it to DVD. Just looks great. I can take it into a church to a wedding or a performance, and I'm not there looking like the stupid-ass videographer, you know, interrupting the service. I said a naughty word, sorry. I'm just, you know, shooting. No problem. I get a GorillaPod like you have there, just hook it on the church pew, hanging out there, and I'm shooting an event. Is it the best video you could possibly shoot? No. But otherwise, you just wouldn't shoot at all. And at night, it looks pretty good at night. So I took it to the wedding reception in a darkened restaurant. You know, the video's a little dirty and a little noisy, but it's still quite presentable. Burn it to a DVD, give it to the bride. Ta-da. What more can you ask?
Matt, is the HD-ness of it, whether it's the Flip or the other,
right,
the compact one,
yeah,
that's kind of the format. Is the quality diminished in other ways? Let's say, compare. I mean, besides the zoom and all,
right,
as opposed to a regular, like the Sony.
You know, you look at it on a screen, it looks great. It just looks great. And the HD is definitely higher resolution. The main problem with these camcorders is shake. Even if you try to brace yourself, they're just so light, you don't get the weight on the camcorder. So the GorillaPod, for example, makes a lot of sense.
Because I know it's at the older Flip,
mm-hmm,
and the quality's not the same as, let's say, the DVD.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But
absolutely.
In terms of graininess, because yeah, the HD is...
The HD definitely looks better. Yeah.
Doug, no cable. Show them how you flip that. I think that's how you flip.
Yeah.
The
yeah. And so the same thing, you don't need a cable or anything. The USB connector in this case comes popping right out the top. So you just plug it right in and it powers through the connector. I mean, it's just beautiful.
The
standard def is like 179 and the HD is like 220 or something like that. And they'll customize the case for you for free. So you design your own case, upload it, and it's no question money back. Even if you've customized the case. What more can you ask for, right?
If it's HD format,
Yeah.
Can you put it onto a Mac and play on the computer?
Yeah, so some of these actually have MOV format video on them, and the HD stuff is usually AVC HD MPEG 4, so that's very Mac happy stuff, yeah, absolutely.
So you can take a film and put it in
Mac. And just, yeah. Yeah, should be very Mac happy. Another company that's doing a bunch of these camcorders is DXG. This little one I showed you is actually a DXG. So for $179, you can choose whether you want this kind of form factor or the vertical form factor. And again, shoot in HD in all kinds of ways. And I'm a big fan of the RCA Small Wonder line. They have all that stuff that the Flip took out. They put back in, okay? So it has a battery, removable battery, it has removable storage, it has a flip-out display, for example. And these make great gifts. We've given 3 or 4 of these as like wedding gifts or graduation gifts. What do you give to kids, you know, these days? You know, so you give it to them, they go off on their honeymoon and just have a ball with it. And
what's the name of that?
Small Wonder is the line. And they're in, you know, Best Buy and places like that. You know, give it for the wedding. Don't ask to see the video that comes back, right? All right, okay. Video projectors are coming. 3M and this other company, Optima, have small handheld video projectors, which are just absolutely spectacular. 7 to 9. So it would work okay in here. In daylight, it's clearly a problem. And they're great for the ceiling. So, you know, in the restaurant, you can show your presentation on the ceiling. But they're just really, really fun and really, really clever. The other thing that's coming is instant photos. So Polaroid's back. Polaroid is back. So this is the Polaroid Pogo printer. This prints, you can either connect from a camera or you can do Bluetooth from your cell phone. And in less than a minute, it prints a little teeny photo. And this uses a technology called Zinc, zero ink. So it's pretty much smoke proof. You don't have to worry about it drying or anything. The back actually peels off, so it's a sticker. So it's just sort of impromptu photos. Smaller, actually. It's like 3x4. So you can visit the Zinc site. And Dell just today announced their version of this, the Wasabi printer. Regularly $150 because it comes in Wasabi colors, right? But they're running a special at $99. And this is just the coolest thing. It's just very clever. Very great idea. Yeah, they both use the Zinc technology. The paper, yeah, 30 to 40 cents a print, depending on how you buy them. So it's, you know, it's not too bad. You, on your cell phone, you look at the picture in your picture gallery, and then there should be an option on your recent cell phone, though I don't know about iPhones. I looked at that, and now I forget, which says print to Bluetooth. And then a minute later, you got a picture. You know, just absolutely the coolest thing. The other way to connect your digital camera is with Wi-Fi. So Sony has a Wi-Fi camera they just introduced at CES. And then there's this company called iFi. They make SD memory cards that have Wi-Fi built in because there's so much more room on that card now, right? So you customize your card with the information about what you want it to do with your photos, and when you take photos, it finds Wi-Fi, it connects over your home network and stores it on a home computer, or it just goes straight to Flickr or whatever and uploads your photos for you. It's really, really brilliant. So this whole thing about swapping and, you know, uploading and all that kind of thing just goes away, which is very nice.
So you're saying you program it from the computer?
Right, to tell it what to do, yeah.
So any...
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. The only camera dependency is that it sucks the battery in a slightly weird way, and some cameras don't like
so
that.
So it actually has a microchip?
Yeah, on the card. It's a Wi-Fi chip, yeah, basically.
But it knows the information of what it's
yeah.
doing.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, just hold the questions because we're really running late.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yep, will do. lots of small screen big screen TVs. TVs more and more will be internet enabled with gadgets and widgets and all the rest of that kind of stuff on your TV, if that's what you want to do. And then down here, I have a couple other sort of fun devices to show you. One is this Logitech Comfort Lap Desk. So if you're sick and tired of having the laptop on your lap, burning your legs, causing your area down there to sweat, and hurting your back, this makes a heck of a lot of sense. It's curved, so it only rests on four points. There's air flowing here. You know, this is a soft kind of thing, and this is heat-resistant top as well. And so four only, what is the price on that? $39, and just now available. It's just a brilliant brand thing. Very light, very portable, easy to hide away. And yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they have some sexy notebook things as well. Verbatim has just introduced the TuneBoard speaker keyboard. This is the last thing I'll show you. For $69, comes in Mac and PC versions. This is the Mac version, which means it doesn't have that ugly Windows key on it, right? And so it's a standard keyboard with a speaker attachment on the top of it. So one USB connection, and you have all that stuff happening here. So that makes a lot of sense. Very, very nice design. So that's it. All kinds of crazy stuff from CES and some trends to look forward to. Yeah. Well, there are glasses that project forward, and the whole retina thing, I'm just not a big fan of, what can I say? So I really haven't been trying those out. I've seen that kind of thing around, but I certainly haven't been interested in experimenting. Yeah, that's true too. Anything else? Good.
What about, when you had Kindle there?
Yes.
Where are digital books heading? Nowhere?
There's a market for that. Yeah. And electronic paper as a format is coming along, and we'll see some more breakthroughs there, which will make
Kindle
that even more sense.
Now, and there's no other players in the game?
I mean, not with that kind of bump behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Doug,
take it away.
Thank you enough.
Oh, sure.
Great presentation. Thank you. Really fabulous.
Thank you.
Take care. Everybody, Doug Dixon, everyone.
That's it for this PMUG podcast. Website links to the items mentioned in the presentation are available. Either look in the lyrics field of this audio file or this podcast episode in iTunes. Just bring up the podcast library. Then, for this episode, click the I Info button on the right side. Please visit our website for the latest member news and information. Our address is pmug-nj.org. This podcast was produced by your PMUG webmaster, Michael Blank. Thank you for listening.